Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
And in Film Club, they're singing in the rain in French in Jacques Demy's Umbrellas of Cherbourg.
Mais je ne pourrai jamais vivre sans.
Or coming up in Truth and Movies, the Little White Lies podcast. Hello there, movie truthers. It's Michael Leader here, back in the host's chair, sitting across this week from Pamela Hutchinson.
Hello.
And Hannah Woodhead.
Hello. Welcome.
How are we all doing today?
So, welcome back.
Oh, thank you, Hannah.
Yeah, welcome back from your travels.
Yes, yeah. I didn't get lost in Tokyo, although I want to go back.
Oh, that's the problem. As soon as you come back, you're like, I want to be back there. Like, it's beautiful. It was very envious of your very well-documented trip. It looked like an absolute blast.
Well, it's all in the rearview mirror now, and we have films to talk about, and we've got the end of the year where all the films are happening, from Cats to Star Wars. Gosh. But before we do any of that, Hannah, do we have any Little White Lies business to talk about or announce?
We do. We're having a little house book sale on Monday, about 12 till 3, if anyone's in the area. We're based in Old Street. There will be a tweet about this, so don't feel like you have to refer back to the podcast. But we're gonna have like prints for sale and old issues and books and magazines and things. So yeah, come down, buy some Christmas presents. We'll give you a good price, and it'd be nice to see some people. And then we're doing a special screening of Josh and Benny Safdie's, I want to say, first proper feature, Daddy Long Legs, which is a really beautiful film starring Ronald Bronstein, who is now their co-writer and editor. That's on the 9th of January at the Prince Charles. And you and I, and possibly David, we haven't yet confirmed, okay, we're going to do a little kind of mini Truth and Movies afterwards. Mm-hmm. You can buy tickets now from the Prince Charles website. It'll be really fun. It's good. One to get you in the mood for Uncut Gems, which hits cinemas the next day. So yeah, come on down. It'd be nice to, again, see some people.
Brilliant. Plenty of things coming up then. But we should talk about this week's new releases. Up first, we have Shia LaBeouf in Honey Boy. Honey Boy traces the life of child actor Otis Lort as he rises from early success to becoming a self-destructive Hollywood star. Based on LaBeouf's own life, Honey Boy weaves together two timelines as he comes to terms with his ex-rodeo clown father, played by LaBeouf, in a role inspired by his own dad.
You have good instincts.
I have good instincts?
Yeah,
I got rodeo clown instincts. Well, I could never make it in Hollywood.
You could if you start when I did.
How do you think it feels to have my son paying me? How do you think that feels?
You wouldn't be here if I didn't pay you.
A little bit of Honey Boy. So, Hannah, Shia LaBeouf has had quite a career, hasn't he? Going from Transformers to public art installation.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And now he's making his own life into art.
Yeah.
How do we feel about this?
I feel pretty great about it. I mean, I grew up on Even Stevens. So for me, Shia LaBeouf's always been a kind of big presence in my life. I was a big fan of the Disney film Holes, if you remember. Yeah, a classic. I've always kind of felt a bit sorry for him, you know. I think he went through a lot, and very publicly so. And I don't agree with kind of everything he's ever done, but I do think the press were particularly kind of cruel to him. And, you know, he kind of suffered, I think, in the way that, you know, a very rich white man can suffer, I guess. But yeah, I was kind of interested to see this. I think when it was announced that he was going to be playing his own father, there was a lot of kind of like, okay, like, fine, I guess. Like, a lot of, you know, snobbery, maybe. Because everything he does, I think, because of all his performance art stuff, I think people just assume he's kind of doing a bit all the time. But I remember when he did a thing, like an art installation in LA, I think, where he watched all of his own films and TV shows in a movie theatre, and he invited the public to come down, and he live streamed the whole thing with just the camera like on his face. And there's this bit in it where he was watching Even Stevens and he's like crying, and it's so like, that for me is what this film is. It's him like reckoning with this like accelerated youth and processing a lot of things that I get the sense he didn't process when he should have done as a kid. So yeah, I was kind of blown away by this. I saw it at Sundance, so it stayed with me a long time now, you know, nearly a year in fact. And I really do think it is a very special movie, and I'm really kind of grateful to him for sharing this story with us.
It sounds like it could be a very indulgent project.
Oh, big time. Yeah.
But is that a good or a bad thing in this case?
I think recently, like when I've been talking to a lot of filmmakers, they've said the same thing, which I guess I'd never really thought about. But they said the more specific you make something, the more universal it is, which sounds like it doesn't, like, you're like, how does that make sense? But in this case, I think like it is so, so specific to his childhood and what he went through. Like, most of us don't have the experience of being like a childhood star. But and it is indulgent, you know, it's talking very specifically to this thing that he went through. But at the same time, I think there are a lot of people out there who can relate to having a difficult parental relationship, or kind of growing up too fast, or just struggling to deal with their emotions. I think there's such a kind of conversation at the moment around the way that men process their emotions and their anger, and how men in particular should feel like they're more able to communicate these things without it impacting on how people see them. And this film, to me, feels like a very kind of honest, laying it all on the table, this is how it is moment for him, which I think isn't something that Shia has necessarily been able to articulate in a productive way so far. He's always been very good at acting out, but not in a kind of, not corralling that energy into something that I think really gives people a sense of where he's coming from. And I think this film does kind of give you a really nice insight into his life and his psyche and how this experience changes you. I mean, we all know about the kind of the curse of the child star, but I think there hasn't really been a lot of great movies and art about that. Because it is like a very niche thing, you know. There aren't a lot of child stars who go on to kind of mainstream success when they're older. So it's nice to see one of them kind of articulating this experience in such a kind of eloquent and a really like beautiful way. I think the pairing of Shia and Alma is really like, it clearly just, they understand each other so much. And I think he came to her with this for something else. Another project entirely. And then in the end, he said, you know, I want to tell this story, but only if you're going to kind of help me. And she said, well, I'll help you, but you've got to play your father. So it does. It sounds like a therapy exercise that's kind of gone awry. I want you to pretend to be your father. But
because you talk about how this project is an opportunity for him to corral all this energy that he's always had on screen. But on screen in this film, he's so compelling. It makes me look at him completely differently as he's playing this older character, this father figure that is clearly so drawn out of his life but appears so fully formed on the screen. Pamela, what's your history with Shia, and does this film make you look at him any differently, appreciate him differently?
I mean, definitely makes me appreciate him differently. I remember when Halls came out, I remember we all thought, what a wonderful child star, you know, he had a real presence. I remember as a young film journalist having to learn to spell his name, you know, when you realise he was taking around.
It's alphabetical through the vowels.
Yeah, which helps, you know, and that's very, very nice.
I never thought of that.
I mean, not entirely. Oh, the surname is, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's sheer as well. I mean, obviously, I have a very low bar for my own spelling standards. I felt that I have no love for the Transformers franchise, but it did become this weird whipping boy for everything that was bad about action cinema. And so I thought, you know, what a terrible choice he'd made. And I thought, you know, this must be really really distressing for him. I didn't know about his childhood. Mm-hmm. Why would I? Although there is, as Hannah sort of suggested, we kind of assume that child stars have a bad childhood. I thought this film was brilliant. I had low expectations. I didn't know what I was going to get from it. It is indulgent. Art is indulgent. Making art about yourself is indulgent. But it's actually, he's taken his pain, his childhood pain, his life of pain, and he's made it into something that is 95 minutes long and very short and succinct and actually quite restrained. The opening montage of him as an action star and him behaving badly off set is one of the neatest sort of summations of how strange it is to be a movie actor I've seen on screen. And I particularly like the fact that as the credits went up, I was slightly worried I was in the wrong cinema and I was about to watch a Transformers film because the sound is so good. A wonderfully restrained performance as his own father. I mean, he is a monster, but I understand now the benefit of these retrospective ratings we do on the show, because I was tensed all the way through for the absolutely horrific moment, for something abysmal to happen. And there are terrible things that happen in this film, but it's not about showboating human cruelty. It's about how he processes that. And that, to me, was something that's quite valuable, yeah.
I think that probably speaks to the provenance of the script as being part of this rehab therapy that Shia LaBeouf might have gone through. I don't know how.
Yeah, he said he wrote it as part of his rehabilitation. Yeah.
As you see in the film.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's something that really is irritating, watching the film be written in the film.
Yes, and a lot of films recently, I think, have done that as well. There's a couple coming up that have done that. But I think it works here. There's a sense of kind of coming full circle within the film and within, I guess, Shia, like, himself making this film. It's all very meta. But I will say, as always, I think the casting of Shia is amazing, and I think it's very kind of, given the amount of pain that clearly he must have gone through to, like, write this down, I think it's a pretty brilliant performance. But also Lucas Hedges and Noah Jupe, I think, are so good playing the Shia part, I guess, at different ages. I think they both bring such different things to it as well. Like, I think Lucas doesn't, in all the other films Lucas Hedges has made so far,
Always in rehab. He's constantly in therapy.
He's constantly in therapy.
Poor guy.
But he's always like, he always tends to be kind of like a bit of a like soft boy, you know. He's just kind of like, poor me, you know. And I think you see a lot more of his kind of like anger in this, which was kind of fun to see. I think the real standout for me is Noah Jupe. Like, that he was 12 when he made this film. Just crazy to be to be that good at 12 years old.
Had he done anything before this? Or was this
so
really his first feature? Right.
And Quiet Place.
And A Quiet Place.
Wonder.
Right, of course.
He's been in a lot of things. He's a little Shire in the making. And he's very good, as we've seen in those films, with silence. And the silent comedy here is just sublime and so moving. I mean, I know it's what I would pick out, but I was floored by it. I really thought it was quite delicately done. This is quite a nuanced Tears of a Clown kind of film. I must say also, I'm getting over a cold. I'm not just broken by emotion. Although this podcast is doing its best to break me with emotion.
Yeah, I spoke to him for a profile, I was writing for Dazed, and he's just like the most kind of like head screwed on child I've ever met. I guess you have to be when you're a kid working in Hollywood nowadays. I think there's a lot more kind of rules and regulations. You do get this sense as well watching Honey Boy about like exploitation and how little in the past, I don't know what it's like now obviously, but how little in the past studios really looked after the children who they were benefiting from and making all this money off. And there's this really heartbreaking scene in the film where Otis is on the phone to his mother, who has moved away because she couldn't deal with it. And he's having to kind of relay messages between his mother and his father. And it's just, oh God, it's just heartbreaking. Like, this kid is one of the, you know, he's a huge star. And this is his, like, home life. This is his reality. This is what he goes home to. I mean, it hit hard for me anyway. As a child of divorce with a terrible father, I was, you know, it was kind of like, Hannah's going to be in on this one. But I really do think the execution is so, it's so easy with this sort of thing to fall into kind of like mawkishness. But like Pamela said, it's very succinct. It's very like
beautifully photographed as well. This is not just a film about talking about feelings about performances. It's a genuinely gorgeous film.
Yeah. So it's Natasha Breyer, I think, who did the cinematography, who is just like, she worked on The Neon Demon and Gloria Bell and The Rover. So she's really, you know, a rising star of kind of the cinematography world.
Very different films. It looks
really
so different.
Yeah.
You wouldn't expect, it makes sense now having seen Honey Boy, but a film about a child actor and his relationship with his father is very different from The Neon Demon.
Young people kind of lost in the the glow of Hollywood, I guess.
No eyeballs are eaten in this film.
No. Oh, God, I completely forgot about that scene until just now. Like, shut it out of my head.
Some very bad things.
But, Hannah, what scores would you give this film? So, in anticipation, enjoyment, in retrospect.
So, it was definitely a 4 in anticipation. It was one of the kind of banner titles at Sundance. Everyone was hyped to see it. Then a 4 in enjoyment. I think it's one of those situations where it just has the perfect kind of everything. It's 95 minutes, perfect runtime for this sort of film. It has these really wonderful performances, brilliant cinematography, great script. I think, I don't know why I'm not giving it a 5. I don't know. Maybe I should be giving it a 5. So it's a 4/5 in enjoyment. And then in retrospect, to a 4. I hope that Shire goes on to write more films. I think he's a very talented writer. And I hope that Noah Jupe goes on to make some more great films. I think he's wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Pamela?
So, I mean, it's hard to say you're not looking forward to something, but I went in with 0 expectations, so 2 anticipation. You know, this is the kind of thing that can go wrong. As I say, there's a certain amount of pain when you're watching the film, so let's take it down to a 3 in the moment. And in retrospect, a solid 4. It's a beautiful film. I highly recommend people go and see it.
Yeah. I think I'm probably more on the Hannah side than your side, Pamela, but I heard the buzz coming out of Sundance, but still had a little bit of trepidation going into this, so maybe it's more of a 3-4-4. Although I will say, Lucas Hedges was so good in Manchester by the Sea, and this is the year where he was in Boy Erased, mid-90s, and this, and I worry that he's losing ground to the Chalamets of the world, and I hope he manages to come back and have a real lead role.
I mean, I think he's a better actor than Chalamet.
He so is.
But, it's interesting, isn't it? I feel like Waves is coming out in January.
Right.
And I think he does play quite a different character in Waves, so we'll see what you guys make of that.
Because no one should see Ben is back.
Ben is back! I completely forgot about Ben is back.
You can't forget.
Or forgive.
It sounds like we'll check in with Lucas Hedges again early next year. But that's it now for Honey Boy. Up next, we're off to China for So Long, My Son. This epic from Wang Xiaoshai explores the impact of China's one-child policy. Spanning the 1980s to the present, but shifting back and forth as you go, Wang details the changing fortunes of a family and those around them, and how government policy has affected their lives. Okay, Pamela, we'll get the joke out of the way first. So long, my son. How long, my son? This is 3 hours long, not quite Irishman length, but still a good night at the flicks.
A very good night at the flicks. Very long, my son. Very good, my son. I was spellbound by this. I thought this was a particularly exceptional film. It's got this wonderful thing about being a melodrama, first and foremost. So we're constantly in that if-only mode. We're constantly wondering what it is that we don't know or what could have happened to make everything better. It's easy to talk about it in terms of the one-child policy, but I don't want to come across as too ignorant. It really is an intimate family saga about relationships, about loss and about grief and the strange things that we do, the way we can betray each other. The way that it's photographed, I mean, I was hooked pretty much from the beginning. We see a tragedy in the distance and we've seen everything else in such vivid close-up. So we know that there's something that we're going to find out about this tragedy later that is going to explode what we see. And we just follow these two couples, really, and their family for 3 exquisite hours of pain. It's pain in that there's terrible things that happen. When I say tragedy, a young boy is killed, and later we see a young boy running away from his parents as well. So that's pretty much a 2-for-1 in brutality. There's more to come, obviously, lots of loss, but it's also difficult to follow in terms of the fact that there's a very complex time structure here. So really, what you're following is this thread of emotion, the thread of melodrama through the entire film. If people are put off by the length, I think that would be a mistake. I mean, it's only really less than an hour longer than a lot of films that we go and see that are much less exciting. And there's so much here that keeps giving to you. The performances are particularly strong, despite the aging and de-aging that goes on with makeup. and there's a certain beauty to it. The best way to express the sort of mode of the film is to say that there's one recurring song that comes back and back and back. It's got Chinese lyrics, but you'll know it as Auld Lang Syne. Mm-hmm. So if you're feeling wistful and moody this Christmas, this is the film for you.
A film to watch as the clock strikes midnight.
Yeah, when you're all alone.
Right. But it is, they do make it a little bit tricky for you. The Irishman was quite fated. It's a superficial comparison we're making here just because of the length. The Irishman has that slow progress of history, whereas this is darting back and forth. Perhaps a little bit, you have to be a leaning in sort of film.
You have to be leaning in. I mean, it's the kind of film you really want to see at the cinema. Mm-hmm. It's not the kind of film to catch up with later. But I have to say that I found it in many ways easier to follow than The Irishman. And I saw The Irishman the first time in a cinema, but you're constantly wondering what the clues are they're going to give you in The Irishman. I think I felt that I should know more about what America looked like in 1952 and 1963 or whatever. Whereas I was just following the faces here. Because I don't know that much about China in the 80s and so on. There are some wonderful set piece scenes that you know to do with particular points in time, to do with the announcement of the one-child policy, to do with awards for family planning that are given out at the factory. I mean, there's some pretty jaw-dropping stuff here. I wasn't ever lost, even if I was disoriented, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. And that's because these emotional threads and also the performances, these are award-winning performances from the two leads.
They picked up
the Silver Bears in Berlin for both actor and actress. Mm. And you see them really grow and change over the years, and but those performances are what pull you through.
Yeah, exactly. And so when you get to, I'm not going to spoil the ending, but just to see two people having a small conversation, it means so much because you've really, it feels like you've lived with them longer than 3 hours and 5 minutes. The 5 minutes are important. but yeah, I gave my heart to this film.
Yeah, it seems to fit in with films we've discussed on this podcast before, films by Zha Zhangke, who comes from a very similar background as Wang, the director here, films that are looking at these very recent Chinese history, how the country has changed, how the people have changed over those years. Mountains Might Depart, for example. I feel like, even though I'm not a Chinese history expert, these are films that are really grappling with recent politics. Hannah, have you learned much from these films or anywhere else we can look?
Well, I mean, I think that in England, particularly in English schools, we learn so little history about anywhere other than England. We don't even learn like Scottish and Welsh history or Irish history. So for us to even learn one iota about China would be great. I don't know if it's to do with Chinese filmmakers kind of feeling more able to express their opinions about Chinese history and about Chinese government, because I feel like there's still a lot of censorship over there. I don't know if it's becoming easier for them to get these films out of China or what, but I do feel like from my kind of limited knowledge of Chinese cinema and Chinese politics and history, we're getting more access to these films. The One Child Nation, the documentary, was like hugely kind of talked about. I think it's a Netflix film.
Right.
It's on Netflix, certainly. And obviously that policy, I think, it doesn't exist anymore. But it was such a kind of, growing up, it was kind of the only thing that you really knew about China. It was like, oh yeah, they can only have one child there. And it's not even true. It's actually like, there's a lot more to the policy than that, which is something that So Long My Son kind of digs into. It does kind of go into this, the kind of knotty politics of the policy. I must confess that I only managed to watch half of this film because I didn't realise it was 3 hours when I sat down at 11 p.m. to watch it. But it is one I will definitely be finishing because it is very beautiful. I wish I wasn't watching it on a laptop screen because I do feel like it is so quiet and so nuanced that you do want to just immerse yourself completely in a cinema. And it is in the same mode as The Irishman in this kind of like, you know, progression of time and grappling with regret. But I think The Irishman is a lot more showy. This is definitely a lot more kind of subtle and a lot more restrained, which is really a delight to see. I think it's something that could American and British cinema could maybe learn from.
Yeah.
I mean, I would say, you know, we all sort of wince when we hear something about a 3-hour film, but really, you know, I've seen hour and a half long films that were much more irritating and lengthy to me. 3 hours is not that long. It's not that long at all. And I don't think the time should put anyone off.
No, not at all. No. I mean, you know, people will sit and watch a Netflix series that's 8 episodes, an hour a piece. They'll sit and watch that in two sittings. So, you know, I think it's, It's an evening. I think, really, if you go to the cinema to see this, you're getting more for your money anyway. So why
true.
Not, you know?
Never mind the quality, feel the width. Yeah. No, but I mean,
it's good anyway.
It's also very good, yes.
Although, with my film dad hat on, I must say I very rarely have 3 hours spare of an evening to do anything.
Yeah.
Usually within half an hour, I'm asleep on the sofa. So this is one that I've put a pin in this film. I'm going to go and see it whenever I have. Maybe an evening off or an afternoon.
I think you'll enjoy it. I mean.
Absolutely wonderful. Pamela, what scores would you give this film?
Oh, God. Well, I will give a different score for every single hour of it that I watch. No, I heard it was a family melodrama. I heard good things. So it's a 4 in anticipation. 4, 4, 4. I don't really understand these rankings. I just think it's a very good film. I enjoyed it and I'm very glad that I watched it. So it's a 4, 4, 4.
Fantastic. That's a very strong recommendation from the table for this. Actually, for both films this week, for Honey Boy and So Long My Son. If you do go and see either of these films, let us know what you think at the usual channels. That is Truth and Movies on Twitter, truthandmovies@tcolondon.com via email, or the comments section at lwlies.com/podcast. Up next, Film Club. Panel, you'll be very happy. This is a musical. We have The Umbrellas of Cherbourg.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Back in cinemas, thanks to the BFI as part of their nationwide musical season, The Umbrellas of Cherbourg was described by director Jacques Demy as a film in song. This Palme d'Or winner made a star out of its young lead, Catherine Deneuve, and has since been a major influence on directors such as Damien Chazelle. Let's hear a little snippet.
Mais je ne pourrai jamais vivre sans toi. Je ne
A little bit of The Umbrellas of Cherbourg there, according to Damien Chazelle, the greatest film ever made. Hannah, do you agree? How about them umbrellas?
Well, I mean, this is the words of a man who has not seen Jack and Jill. No, it is very good. I'd not seen it before. Ironically, I actually bought an umbrella yesterday, a proper umbrella, you know, like a big umbrella.
Like Poppins.
Yeah. And it's bright pink and it's very, very umbrellas.
Did you fall for the person in the umbrella shop?
No, but they were all very beautiful. Uh-huh. It was like a pop-up in Covent Garden. It was very picturesque. And then I went home to watch this beautiful movie and I was like, oh that was me. Except I'm not Catherine Deneuve gallivanting. Oh, Pamela. but no, I mean, obviously I've heard about this film and it's one that and the Young Girls of Rochefort. I want to call it Rochefort.
It's a cheesy film.
So I've not seen that either, but it's, you know, I feel like David Jenkins is always talking about the Jacques Demy musicals, mm-hmm. and I'm not really a musicals person, so I kind of was like, I'll get around to it. But I'm glad I did. It is a musical. They sing everything.
Absolutely everything. Yeah.
Absolutely every damn thing. Like, put the kettle on.
Which I was not expecting. I was very like, oh, okay. Well, everything's going to be in song then. But it's very hard for me to be cynical because it's so lovely. Mm. There's this really kind of sweeping, recurring motif, I guess, and they use it right at the end, and I shed a little tear. It is one of the most beautiful, heartbreaking endings in, well, not even heartbreaking, it's just very melancholy. Mm. And I feel like I've definitely seen it riffed on since that, the shot of them in the gas station at the end. It's a really, it lives up to the hype, what can I say, you know.
I did immediately have flashbacks to Tommy, another film we recently did on Film Club, where there's I think only one word of dialogue in the entire film and it's all sung through, but thankfully they can sing in this film and the music is wonderful.
Wow, a dig at my parents there, nice.
Pamela, as the musicals expert here, could you please set us up what this film is doing differently, what it's excelling at, because we had you on last for A Star Is Born, a very Hollywood musical.
This is
very different.
This is connected to the Hollywood musical. I mean, actually, oh God, oh Michael, I remember where and when I first watched this film. You know, I really did think life would not be the same again. And I didn't watch it because it was a musical. I was watching it because I was a 17-year-old budding cinephile and I was interested in the French New Wave and I'd learned that the best films were black and white and edgy and complicated and violent. And so I went in to see Les Parapluies de Cherbourg and I thought, wow, films can actually be wonderful. Now, I love all those French New Wave films. This knocked me for six at 17. I found the aesthetic of this film, which is sort of borrowed from the beauty of that kind of MGM musical, but it's completely Demy's own thing. This the sugar pink, the pastels, the fact that people's clothes match the wallpaper, something that I appreciate so much. The what I like to call prettiness of this film. I'm quite obsessed with pretty cinema. It's something I'd like to bring back. Set against the heartbreaking narrative, and it's about a young girl who falls in love with a young man who's a mechanic, just like Jacques Demy's family were.
Very handsome,
incredibly handsome young actor, and they swear that they will be true to each other and their love will last forever, and then he gets drafted to go and fight in the war. Then life happens, and this is the thing that I remember when I was 17 and I watched this film. I thought, what a beautiful film. But I'm so confused because when you're 17, you don't understand that true love doesn't always last forever. And it's wonderful to watch it now at the age of, you know, 21. And I'm, how rude of you to laugh, to watch it again and see, you know, it's like a little bit more maturity, how the film works on that level emotionally. It's so full of truth, despite this. What will distract people is the aesthetic. Michel Legrand's beautiful music and those pink and green colours, the costumes and Catherine Deneuve's face, framed by a little ribbon.
Yeah, it feels very hyper-stylized, but when you get to the heart of it, it is a very, like, true-to-life story, you know.
Life is disappointing.
Life is disappointing, and things don't work out the way you want them to. Before we came on air, I sort of said, imagine dumping Catherine Deneuve, and Pamela chimed in with,
oh, well, there was a war, babe.
Which is, yeah, fair enough. Like, you know, I think it's, and I think this is where this movie succeeds in La La Land, which basically steals from this film shamelessly and doesn't do it quite as well. Where this kind of succeeds is that it's all very matter of fact. And even though it is in song and it's, you know, it's all very like, oh, it doesn't actually feel like, it doesn't, weirdly, it doesn't feel melodramatic. Even though it is melodramatic, they all accept that life isn't perfect, and you know, there's one scene early on, I think, when Genevieve is like, if you leave, I will die, and that's it, that's kind of it. Though after that, it's like, oh, well,
but the difficulty is that you don't die, that's what's hard about life, yeah.
You survive, and your mother says you should marry this nice man who's come along and is offering to raise your unborn child as his own, and you're like, oh, right.
I mean, I spoiled quite a lot there, but
I'm sorry, but
it's 1964.
It's a 1964 movie. If you've not seen it by now, like, you deserve to be spoiled, but you should also go and watch it.
I mean, to be fair, I don't think that knowing the ending ruins it. There's something, a second time, you know, there's something wonderful about the anticipation, knowing that your heart is going to break, and in such a beautiful way, knowing that love is fragile, just like the music. Oh God, this film is like a held breath. That's why it's so wonderful that it's sung, because you are completely in its, you know, in its claws for an hour and a half, and when it lets you go, you're not the same again.
And because it's sung completely through, songs appear out of the musical landscape. It's not a jukebox musical in the way that
it's
we might
La
expect.
Land, where,
exactly where there yeah, are, but there are still. We heard a little clip of one of them, one of the great big bangers of the soundtrack.
I can't believe you said banger. Even at the grand age of 21, that makes me feel old.
So we would recommend this one. Demoiselles de Rochefort, also worth looking at.
Very much so. All this plus Gene Kelly.
Oh, wow.
Gene Kelly's in that film. Yeah, I'm showing my ignorance. I will go and watch that now, having seen this. It is like a, even if you don't like musicals, you should watch this, just because it's a part of film history as well, I think.
And I think that the BFI have used this in their marketing. I think Sam Wigley, one of their writers, wrote this in a piece earlier in the year. You can see that this film had at least a visual inspiration and influence on Wes Anderson and
the
other
totally,
Chocolate Box filmmakers outside of the musical.
The actual, the umbrella shop itself in the film, which is, I don't know if we mentioned, but that's the shop that Genevieve's parents own, or mother, I guess.
Mother, yeah.
It's... I can't believe they make any money. I was like, they have about four umbrellas in there. But it's very beautiful. I was like, oh, I'd love to go to this shop. It's all kind of pink and like checkerboard and lovely umbrellas. And it's, yeah, I want to live in this world. I don't want to lose the love of my life to a war and then another woman, but I do want to live in the kind of beautiful, pastel, dreamy landscape that they create.
I want to find you a nice rich man to take care of you and make that heartbreak all the better.
Yeah, I don't know why I'm so like, oh, it must have been tough for her. She marries a very handsome man, and she, when we meet the two leads again, they seem very happy with their lot in life. I think it also, like, it's this kind of message that life does go on. Like, you know, you it doesn't hurt forever. You know, you need to hear that sometimes.
Yeah. And it's interesting that we're looking at this film the same week as something like So Long, My Son, where there is a similar just sense that the passing of time...
And Honey Boy.
..need not be as melodramatic as we're told in some other films. It can just be life.
I think that all three films this week are very good at dealing with parent-child relationships as well. Hmm. So obviously, like, the relationship between Genevieve and her mother is very... contentious. It becomes less so, I think, as the film goes on. I think that as Genevieve kind of grows up, she understands a bit more. Even though, like, they have, I think, a couple of scenes together, her and her mother. But, I mean, I'm probably, like, projecting onto it. But
I
think...
The one where she says she's pregnant and her mother says, how did that happen? I mean, that's a great scene.
Exactly, yeah. I think there's been a nice through line this week. All these films deal
It feels
very
like we've been doing
it.
Sort of parent-child films and relationship movies for the last 3 or 4 weeks with Marriage Story, with The Irishman.
What is it with Christmas? So we're all just kind of like, oh, I'm so sad.
Although we don't have that next week.
No, next week's very different.
Next week's films, we have Jumanji, The Next Level. It's back to blockbuster season as Christmas looms. We have Aquarella, a very unique documentary. And then for Film Club, 'Tis the Season. So we're going to watch Black Christmas from 1974.
How fun.
Black Christmas it shows you everything you need to know about Christmas movies.
Yeah.
They're dark as hell.
Yes. Oh, anyway, let us know what you think about Black Christmas or any of the films we talked about this week at the usual channels. Truth and Movies on Twitter, truthandmovies@tcolondon.com via email, or at the comments section at lwlies.com. Pamela, Hannah, a pleasure as always. Thank you for joining me. I'm Michael Leader, and as always, this has been a 7 Digital production.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.